Mishanichtesu lo'oretz, you know, once the Jews entered Eretz Yisrael, lo'i hukshiru kol arotus l'mashiro, fine. All right, so none of the other nations were now kosher or valid, you know, to recite Shira, right? So far, so good. But then it says, but kevan shegalu, but once the people of Israel went into exile, chazru, they returned, what? Lehafsheron, to Rishon. So they returned, you know, to the first state, which means what? That they should be able to recite Hallel. Because, you know, the Jews were no longer living in Eretz Yisrael during the time that they were in Golos. Okay. The soup, the lack of. All right, hold it. Now, that's something else. Okay, so far as we see, he's not particularly happy with the argument, but nevertheless, we know what do we do, what is our practice, and the answer is that we take a read the Megillah, but we do not recite Hallel on Purim. Okay? So that is the custom that we follow.
Does Rashi have any comments
on that? No. Not as particular. This was long established in Rashi's time. But now we're going to read some Rashi for the next thing. Okay. Remember we read about how many prophets and prophetesses there were. Okay?
All right.
So they started. The Sudaka. And you mean to say, first of all, that that's all that there were, prophets? Maybe we had more prophets. That's the first question, right? The Hoksiv, for example, right at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, what do we find? It's written over there that Vayehi ish echod min Horvasayim, Sofim, okay? There was a man who came from Ramasayim, Sofim. Okay. Now, you know, of course, I mean, in the original Ramasayim Sofim happens to be a place name. Okay?
What?
It's a place name.
A place name,
yeah. Ramasayim means literally a double hill.
Mm-hmm.
And Sofim would mean, you know, where people can watch and see, you know, the countryside for a long distance. Okay? But, the but is, first of all, we've already used the word Sofim in the Megillah much earlier, in the sense of also prophets.
Prophet.
Yep. You remember way, way back that the discussion was about the letters. What kind of letters we use? In the alphabet, okay?
Oh, yeah.
We
they
use
like
one
the
alphabet, a different alphabet, and
they
raise the question
like
and they say, you know, about Mansbach. Who ordained, you know, that five letters in Hebrew have a different form at the end of a word as compared to, the position any place else in the word. And they said over there that Mansbach, Sofim, they were the ones, the prophets, but literally those who, like the seers or something like that, they are the ones who ordained it. So, that being the case, we see that the word Sofim is already equated with
prophets,
okay? Now, Ramasayim, which as I said, in its origin probably means a double hill, because in Hebrew, the ayim ending usually indicates two, usually, a pair, whatever it may be, okay?
Pair. Yeah.
Okay. That's for example, Yadayim, Einayim, Raglayim, Slayim, etc., etc. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Or even the word Shnayim, you know, that's the idea. Okay. And so therefore what they say, the Rav Masayim is really, it's made up of the word Masayim. What does Masayim mean in Hebrew? It means 200. Masayim means 200. Now if I were talking Israeli, it would be Matayim, right? But I'm talking Babylon right now, okay? Which is the way I like to approach a Gemara. In Babylon.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so in that case, if we take literally this business, you know, man from, we're saying he was one of what? Echad bin Masayim Sofim, right? He was one of 200 prophets, Shenisnabu Lahem Yisrael, right? There were actually then 200 prophets now who prophesied Israel. So that already right?
Where does this come from? I mean, where does the phrase come from?
Take a look. The name is Rabbi Chaim Sofer, right? And then what does it say right at that? He was, it's remember, it says, Ish Echod min Hor Masayim Sofer, right? So they interpreted it as Echod, he was Ish Echod, he was one man, Mimosayim Sofim, right, from among the 200 prophets, Shinis Nabu Lehemli Yisrael, right?
And say, what, this is a quote from what?
Huh?
What is this a quote from?
Oh, the very beginning of the book of Shmuel.
Well, okay.
Right. You know, he was the, his name was, Elkanah, and so on and so on, and, you know, and the, then afterwards he had two wives. Chan and Penina, etc., etc. All right. So, Mehava Tuva. So, that's a lot, right? So, we see, in other words, that, there's more than just what? Than the 48 that they mentioned, right? And so, we now see that there were many, many different prophets who arose among the people of Israel. Kidatanya, as we have a teaching which says, Harbe Nevi'im Omdu Lehem Yisrael. Many, many prophets arose at various times for the people of Israel. And you know what the number was? It's Kiflayim Kiyotze Mitzrayim. Double the amount of people who came out of Egypt. How many people came out of Egypt? We figure always 600,000. You know, of course, we're talking about 600,000 men. But, you know, that's become the figure, the accepted figure. Right, 600,000. So if it's Kiflayim, double the amount, it means that there were more than 1 million prophets who arose for the people of Israel. Okay? So why did they then say that there are only 48? So it says, Elo nevuah shehutzachon adoyrois nichtava. But a prophecy which had consequences for generations to come, this was a prophecy which was recorded. But if it's only, you know, for one immediate situation, for nothing else, then in that case, lo nichtavo. Then in that particular case, it was not written down. Okay? Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani Omar, Rabbi Shmuel Nachmani said, Odom habo b'shtei romos shetzofo zuazil. He gave him more literal interpretation. He says, he was a man who came from two hills which looked upon each other. In other words, I said a double hill. Okay? Yeah. So he gives a literal interpretation. Right. Rabbi Chanan Omar, right, he gave a different interpretation. He says, Odom habo b'bnei Odom. He is a man descended from people, she'omdim v'rumo shel oilam, right? Who are, they stand in the very heights of the world. In other words, people who have a very high position in this world, uman ninhu, and who are they? They are b'nei Korach. Agresa glik, tichsiv, because it is written, b'nei Korach, lo mesu, right? That the sons of Korach, right, did not die. So this, you know, I would take it literally. The sons of Korach did not die. Okay? Why? Because then we have subsequently in the book of Psalms, we have, let's say, Bnei Korach Mizmor, Shom Mizmor Bnei Korach, right? So in other words, they had descendants. Korach had descendants who eventually they were Levi'im and they sang in the Beis HaMikdosh and they composed some of the Psalms, you know, etc., etc. Okay. But what was the grace of Glick from the B'nai Korach Tana? So we have a tradition, that's the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says, Mishum Rabbeinu, this was in the name of Rebbe. It says, Mokom Nisbatzelehem Begehidam. Okay? That they had a place, a very high place in Gehidam.
Yeah.
In other words, they went down, he says, in other words, together with the rest, you know, Korach and his whole group, you know, that they all went down into the earth. But they were given a special place where, obviously, the flames didn't reach him. They had his pistol suits or something up there. Okay, they give him the high place.
But yeah, the fact so that was. Huh? He wasn't killed.
Sure he was. Korach died. He was swallowed up by the earth. He forgot.
Yeah, but I think there was some sort of measures that said that he was not, that he was left behind, so he could recount the...
it's not Korach. I'll tell you what you're thinking of. You're thinking of, there is a medrash that talks about Pharaoh. That he was not drowned in the Red Sea, but he was spared in order to be able to see, you know, the wonders of God, what the Benishim had done for the people of Israel. There is such a message. Okay? All right. So, at this particular point, before we go into the women, you know, the prophetesses, okay, I want to read with you right now a Rashi, great big Rashi, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to follow Rashi, first of all, about the reading of the Megillah as compared to their Hanukkah, okay? So, take a look at the Rashi on the top of the page, okay, line 3, okay, towards the end of the line.
Right.
So it says, Chutz Mikra Megillah, right?
Yeah.
In other words, the prophets did not add or detract anything from, or subtract anything from the Torah, except for the fact that they added the reading of the Megillah. The Yim Tomar, and if you mention their Chanukah, right? So it says, for Paschal Avim, there were no longer prophets in the days of Chanukah. Of all being made Mordechai, but in the days of Mordechai, there were still prophets. For you, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, these were the last of the three prophets. So they still existed. So there's still prophecy in the days of, the events that took place. And therefore, we could find a prophetic inspiration or prophetic heksher, so to speak, you know, for the reading of the Megillah. Whereas, Hanukkah, as I said, is a later event, and the rabbis had their reasons for making it into a mitzvah. Okay. All right, then I'll just continue straight with the Rashi over here because it's easier to follow. He says, "Me'avdus l'cheiros," right? We know that what happened. Bitzias Mitzrayim omu shira l'ayo, right? They said shira at the Red Sea to celebrate their emerging from slavery into freedom. So now the question is, halel name shira? So why shouldn't we say it also? Shehi shira, yeah. So it says, Hochi Gatsinin, so we have to read the interpretation as follows. It says, Omar Rova, Bishna Mohos, and Sephiroth, Avde Faro, Sharei Lachiris Yotzer. You know, why do we say Hallelujah Avde Hashem, right? Because we're no longer Avde Faro, because we are now free. But can we say the same thing about Achashverish? We can't, because Akate Avde Achashverish Anon, we're still the servants of Achashverosh, right? The lo nigalu ela min hamitzvah. All that we were redeemed from was death itself, but not from the fact that we still have to serve Achashverosh. Hi, Yaakov, how are you?
I just want to say we're finished.
You are finished with all the pictures?
Yes.
Okay. You didn't break the camera?
No.
Okay.
Good job.
Very good. How you doing, Zachary? Okay. Ready to shine forth in all your glory? That's a week from the Shabbos, right? Okay, wonderful.
Mazel tov.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can lock it. No alarm, please.
No, it has to be loud.
Okay.
It's so loud. Have you ever heard it? It's so loud. It is loud.
Yes, it is loud. And Peter will object that the police will come looking for it. Okay. Rather, who said that we don't say Hallel because we're still servants of Achashverosh. Okay. So, Ben Rav Nachman, who is the other one, the Omar creates Megillah bimkom Hallel. In other words, we're in Megillah follows and so on. But, you know, how can, but maybe yes, maybe we should. So they again, you know, it's, we learned that Hushru Shora Motzis Limashira. In other words, once you know, the Jews went into exile, then in that case it should be possible once more for Jews to recite Hallel to celebrate, whatever land they may be, a miracle that takes place over there. Okay? This is what he says. All right? Whether we observe it or not, but okay, all right.
That's a good argument.
So yeah, it's a good argument for us to recite also then Hallel of the year and Yom HaTzibut, Yom Yerushalayim. Okay. Then, okay. Then the question was asked by in the Gemara, and Rashi says, Suleka, I mean, are there no longer, are there any more, aren't there any more Nevi'im? So what did we say? We said, Nevu'ah Shehut Tzuchon Adoros. In other words, a prophecy which was needed to, you know, to teach people for generations to come, Lilmot, Teshuvah, to learn, for example, how to repent, Ohora, or a teaching, you know, which we have to follow, the Chol Hanach, and likewise. So Memches Hutzrichu, we needed 48 different prophets, right? Now, with the Halachas Gedolos, Minuyin Mesedo Elam. And the Halachas Gedolos, which is one of the early books of law, you know, one of the early codes of law, the Halachas Gedolos, so we have a count taken from the Seder Elam. This is what I mentioned before about the Seder Elam. Okay, so now the Seder Elam lists the following people: Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, the Aaron, Yehoshua, Pinchas. Okay? Pinchas, they say. How do we know that Pinchas is a Navi? So they call the Pasuk, Vayal Malach Hashem in Gilgal El HaMoichim. It says that the angel of the Lord went from Gilgal to HaMoichim. HaMoichim is the name of the place, but it means literally, you know, the people who were weeping. In other words, he went in order to teach the people of Israel how to do tshuva, okay? And they say, Ze Pinchas, right? This is Pinchas. Then it's written, Vayavo Ishra to him El Eli, right? And the man of God came to Eli. This, of course, this is the same Eli who was the high priest in Shiloh at the time of Shmuel, right? So he says, Ze Elkanah. So therefore, Elkanah is also to be considered a prophet. And Eli, include him too, Shmuel, definitely, God, okay, God was in the days of David, that's why we say, Vayomer David, El God, right, Salmi Miyod, and so on, right, because God gave him prophecy, he told, you know, why the people of Israel were facing destruction because of David's deed, so David changed his way. Then we have Nathan, the prophet Nathan, there's no question about him. And David and Shlomo, they're also. And then they have mentioned later on in the book of Malachim about Edo, right? Because we have over there a sentence, Korah, it says, El HaMizbeach BeVeisel, right? He was the one who cried out concerning the altar in Beisel. He promised, you know, that it would be destroyed eventually. This was the one which was set up by Yeravim ben Nevat when he wanted to split the people of Israel. Then we have Michayahu ben Yimla, the Imei Achav, right, who prophesied in the days of Achav. And then we have Ovadia, who also lived at the time of Achav. And then we have Achia Hashiloni, who was another prophet who was mentioned in the book of Malachim, the Yehu ben Hanani, Imei Asa, the days of Asa, and then we have Azariah ben Oded, and then we have Chaziel HaLevi, David Masniyoho, we have Eliezer, who is Ben Dodo, his uncle, Ben Marisha, who came from Marisha.
These were all prophets.
Right, these were all prophets. Golombi Imei Hoshafot, Bedevere Hayomit. Now, these names all occur, that is the last group of names, occur not in Shmuel or Melachim, but it occurs in the Devere Hayomit, where there is more, you know, that they, in telling, again, the history of the people of Israel, they also include incidents or names and so on that were omitted in the earlier accounts. Okay.
And he's counting up to the 48 here? Is that
so? It's counting up to the 48, correct. Okay. The Emeya Rabban ben Yoash, who happened to be the among the last kings, you know, of the Medinas Yisrael, not Medinas Yisrael, but of Malchus Yisrael, you know, the northern kingdom. Okay, so you had Hosea, you know, Prophet Hosea, Amos, right? And then the Emeya Yosam, the days of King Yosam, you had Micha, Hamorashti, right? We may Amatsya, you had Amos, right? Amos Amal Amatsya, Madua, the Rashto, and Edom, right? Because we see that Amatsya, you know, that Amos cried out to Amatsya, you know, he came to reprove the king and he said, why do you go seeking after the gods of the Edomites, right? And then we have others who we didn't mention yet, like Eliyahu, Elisha, Yonah ben Amittai, right? Yeshaya, who lived, right? And then we made Menashe, there's Menashe, we have Yoel, and we have Nachum, and we have Habakkuk, we made Yoshio, we have Zephaniah and Uriah, the Kiryas Yorim, and we have Yirmiyah, right? And then by Gola, when the Jews were exiled to Babylonia, who do we find? We have Yechezkel, we find Daniel, right? And then Mishnah's based on Doyovish, who, in other words, Daniel prophesied in the second year of King Darius, right? Or Darius, whatever you want to call him. Then we have Boruch, and we have Nariah, and we have Sariah, Masiah, Nechagai, Zechariah, Malachi. Some are mentioned in the Bible, others are mentioned in Divrei Hayomim, and so on, okay? Or Mordechai, Bilshon, and the Seder Eilom, the Adonil, Aminul El, Inhu Nevi'e, right? And not only that, but earlier we said that maybe Daniel should be taken out. They were prophets, right? Because he was together with the last prophets, but remember, he saw a vision which they didn't see, right? The Ehu loved Davi, he was not a prophet, so, alright, so if you say take out the name, then I'll take Daniel. So, alright, so take out Daniel's list from the name from the list. For Ayel Shmaya, and add instead Shmaya. Shema the Rachavam, because he said to King Rehoboam, it says, Alta Lu, the Alta Lochamu, Imachechem, B'nai Yisrael. He told Rechavam that he should not go and make war against the kingdom of Israel, which was under the rulership of Jeroboam. He did not want to see a civil war break out between the two kingdoms, okay? And then he says, Ishanim lo yadati. Somewhere along the... I missed two others, he says, okay? So, but nevertheless, what does the tradition say? 48. Well, they're mentioned among the prophetesses. Right, we didn't do it. Yeah, well, he wants to point out that in the Bible there are specifically, you know, various prophets who are named, not just the people in Treyosor, but also we have in other books of the Bible as well, beginning with the earliest. We say Abraham was the Nevi Elohim, okay? He was also a prophet and so on. Yeah.
When we refer to prophet, we're referring to a set group of people.
Okay. When we normally think of prophets, there are different ways to look upon them, okay? Number one, when we talk about the prophets, very often what we have in mind is specifically what we might sometimes call the literary prophets. In other words, the books of Isaiah, Jeremiah, Yechezkel, and the Treyosor, right, which I don't like to use the word minor prophets, because they're just as important to me. I know, yeah.
How about early and later?
Yeah, the Hebrew term is Nevi'im Rishonim, Nevi'im Achronim, but Nevi'im Rishonim actually refers to, who do they mean by Nevi'im Rishonim? They mean people like Shmuel, and others, you know, who are mentioned in the earlier books of the Bible, okay? Or those who lived in the days of David, those who lived in the days of Shlomo, and so on, and their names were included over here in the list. So that's why Nevi'im Rishonim is actually the term that we use to refer to Yehoshua, Shoftim, Shmuel Aleph and Beis, and Malachim Aleph and Beis. That's the Vim Rishonim. Right. Whereas the Vim Achronim includes from Yeshayahu right through Malachi. Okay? All right. Now, I don't want to leave the ladies out, so therefore we will mention them, and then we'll call it a night. Okay. Right. Then it says, V'yabdu Allah. No, excuse me, that belongs to the B'nai Korach, you know, that they had a place where they have a place, an air-cooled place over there. All right. Now, Sheva Leviyos, Maninu, who are the seven prophetesses? So there's Sora, Miriam, Devora, Chana, Abigail, Chulda, the Esther. Okay? Chulda lived in the days of King Yoshio. We'll come
Sarah,
to that next week. You ask a very good question, because very often they're all included as being prophetesses. However, in the list that we have over here, there are only
seven.
Okay.
So they come to
so we'll come back and we'll add more. Okay. All right. Since it's already 9 o'clock, practically, so I think we'll call a halt tonight, and then we'll continue from this next week in Yitzhak. All right. Tonight is the 16th of January in the year 2002, and we are continuing our study of Maseches Megillah, Daf Yud Dalet, Omud Aleph, in other words, 14a, we're in the middle of it. And last week, as we heard, if we were listening to the review, we were talking about the male prophets who were mentioned. Now we come to the women's turn. And we just read the names of the seven prophetesses. Now, Gemara is going to tell us why it considers each one of them a prophetess. Okay? So naturally, who is at the head of the line? The answer was Sora. All right. So let's find out about Sora. Okay. Sora dechsev. In the case of Sarah, what do we find? What verse do we see that will confirm the fact that she was a prophetess? Well, the answer is that if you take a look at the very end, the Parsha of Vayera, right? So they mention over there who was being born and so on to Abraham's family, not Abraham himself and so on. Now, among the people who are mentioned happens to be Avi Milcah, that he was the father of Milcah, Vavi Yiscah, and he was also the father of Yiscah. Okay, Milcah is the one who we find out, you know, he was married to Nochor and so on. Then there's a list of various women. And then Yiscah. So what about Yiscah? Which incidentally in English became the name Jessica.
Jessica.
That became the name. It's called Yiscah in the English translation, the Bible. But from this is how, for example, Sir Walter Scott got the name Jessica, you see. Because remember, a yud at the beginning of a name or a word in Hebrew very often is translated by a J. Right, okay? Right, yeah. So, the father of Yiscah. All right, so Abba Rav Yitzchak. So Rabbi Yitzchak said, Yiscah is a sorry. He says, who do you think Yiscah was? It was Sarah. Okay? So, the question is, well, Lama Nikra Shmo Yiscah? So, if that's the case, why is she called over here Yiscah and not what? Sarah, right?
Sarah,
why is she called Yiscah? So he says, because the name Yiscah has in it an idea. Shesachsa Beruach HaKodesh. The reason being that she was able to gaze upon things with the Holy Spirit. Okay? Well, this course is a word which occasionally is used in Hebrew in order to mean to see something. Okay? There was once a man whom I knew He was considered one of the great experts in the field of Hebrew literature and Hebrew philology and grammar, etc., etc. His name was Doniel Persky.
Who?
Doniel Persky, a friend of the Bracha. He was a bachelor. He passed away. He never married in his life. But he taught in one of the schools in New York called Herzliya, and he continually wrote all kinds of articles in the Hebrew periodicals that I used to read back in the days of my youth yet. And he decided to coin a word for television. So he coined the word sikoyon. Why did he call it sikoyon? From the root over here, which means to gaze upon something, to look upon something. You know, television, sikoyon, okay. Unfortunately for Mr. Persky, the name never caught on.
No.
The only one who ever published that, besides the article that I still remember vaguely, you know, having read it maybe about 70 years ago or so. There was a person by the name of Schaffstein in New York who has a Schaffstein. Publishing.
Schaffstein. Yes.
Publishing
it's
house.
Kitov.
Right. Kitov, correct.
Yeah.
So the original Schaffstein, you know, he published a series of books. And in one of them, he wants the Hebrew word for television, so you're sikayon. So that's the only zecher, the only remembrance that we have of Daniel Persky's Kiddush, which was never accepted. Everybody says television, modern Hebrew,
yeah,
that's all there is to it.
International word.
Right.
Radio
international
is the
word.
Same thing.
Yeah, radio, definitely. Somebody once
well,
pointed out
telephone,
that...
Telephone,
huh?
Telephone?
Telephone, of course, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Fax, you know what a fax is? Fax.
Oh, a fax is a fax.
Right. Yeah, right. So these are words that are international, there's no question about it. But as we see, you know, the root means to look upon, and now if you look, with what? How did Sarah be able, you know, to look upon things? She looked upon it with the Holy Spirit. So this proves what? That she was
a prophetess,
okay?
Can I just step back?
Yeah.
That first name, Yiska.
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 Yeah.
How did that apply to her? When was she named that instead of Sarah?
That's our sages. Yeah, it's a medrash.
Oh,
it's not in the Torah itself.
It doesn't give
I mean, the name is there, but there's no
impression.
Just that by tradition, you know, the traditional commentaries say that this was the name given to Sarah, based upon this Gemara over here, and also quoted in the Medrash as well. Okay? Now, they bring a pasuk in order to show that she had, as we would say, Ruach HaKodesh, the Holy Spirit. Shinama, what does the pasuk say? The pasuk says that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam said unto Avraham, he says, Kol asher tomar elecha Sarah, Shema b'kola. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her voice. Pay attention to what she has to say. In other words, you know, listen and do what she tells you to do. Does anybody remember what connection that was?
Whatever Sarah tells you to
The answer is, it's in connection with the fact that Sarah could not stand Ishmael, the son of Hagar. And so what did she ask Abraham to do?
Send her away.
Abraham didn't like the idea, but nevertheless, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam told him, whatever Sarah told you to do, do. Because of the final analysis, she was able to foresee what would be the result of giving primacy to Ishmael. Go know that the Arabs are going to be descended from him, right? They're still making sorrows for us, unfortunately. Davar Acher, another interpretation of why she was Yiska, says Yiska shakol sochin biyofyo. She was so beautiful that everybody would gaze upon her. So that this is another reason behind the name Yiska. Okay. All right. Now, who was the next one who was mentioned? Was Miriam. Okay. Miriam. Fine. Dichsiv. How do we know that she was a prophetess? Well, first of all, because it is written as soon as, you know, they crossed the Red Sea. What is written over there? Vatikach Miriam Hanavia Achos Aharon. The rest of the pasuk is left out. It says that Hatov Yoda and so on. That she took a timbrel in her hand, right? and you know, and she led the women in singing the song of victory, right? Okay. But the wording is very peculiar, because what is it written? Miriam Hanavia Achos Aharon. Miriam the prophetess, the sister of Aaron. And it doesn't mention what? That she was also the sister of Moshe. So how do they account for that fact? So Omar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman said, Omar Rav, in the name of Rav, Shehoyesom Isnabitla. She was a prophetess who prophesied as follows. Kishehi Achos Aharon, when she was Aaron's sister, right? But what? The implication being that Moshe was not yet born. And what was the prophecy that she proclaimed? She said, Yomeris, and she said, Asido imi shetelet bein shirshus Yisroel. My mother is destined to give birth to a son who will save the Jewish people. Uvishah shenolad, and the moment that Moshe Rabbeinu was born, Nismalei kol habayis kuloi oira, the entire house was filled with light. Okay? So far, so good. Right? Omar Oviho, so her father arose, Uneshokal Rosha, and he kissed her in Kepala. Okay? He kissed her head. Alright? So obviously he was very, very happy, and he said to her, Omalo, he said to her, Biti, Niskayemu Nevuase, your prophecy has been fulfilled. Okay? So God's fine. Now what happens afterwards? The Kevin Shahishni Huhulayor. But then afterwards, when they threw him in to the River Nile, right? Omar of Diho, so her father arose, Utfochal Rasha, and he gave her a clapping cup, okay? He hit her in the head. First it says, you know, he kissed her in the head, you know, when the news was good, and now when he sees the conditions are bad, so he gave her a clapping cup. The Omalon, he said to her, Biti Hechonu Oseich, my daughter, where is your prophecy? Where is the fulfillment of it? You said that this child is going to be the savior of the people of Israel, and here instead, where is he? He's in a basket on the River Nile, right? Hainu Dirsiv, so this then is the reason why the Torah then says, Vatesatsav Achoso Merechok Ledeya. That his sister stood from afar in order to know, in order to learn, you know, what would happen. Remember, and of course, what happened? Of course, Pharaoh's daughter came to bathe with her attendants, and she rescued Moshe Rabbeinu. But what does it mean, l'dayor, to know? So he says, l'dayor mayehev esof nevuasah. She wanted to know what finally would be the outcome of the prophecy which she had predicted, namely, that here was the man who was going to, the son who was going to save the people of Israel.
How much older was she than Moses was?
How much older?
Do we have a tradition for that?
What we do know is that Aaron was 3 years older than Moshe. That's written specifically. We read it in the Torah this past Shabbos that you know, Moses was 80 years old, and Aaron was 83 years old when they began to talk to Pharaoh. Now, obviously, Miriam had to have been born several years before that because of the fact, you know, that she was able to observe Moshe and be able to speak to the princess and everything else, you see. So she was the firstborn, obviously, and then after that came.
How
many years separated them? No. In the case of Miriam, we don't know. Okay. All right, so far we've established that Miriam is also a prophetess. And of course, it's written specifically Miriam Hanavia, so we know, I mean, that she is a prophetess, okay?
And she had to be well into her 80s when she was leading these women dancing with the symbols.
Yeah,
there.
Right, absolutely. No, so she was a youthful lady,
correct.
Okay? Egypt was like Florida, you know.
Right.
She got full of spirit. Okay. All right. Then there was the next one that was mentioned, Deborah. Okay. So the Gemara says, Deborah, how do we know that? we have a pasuk, and the pasuk says specifically, with the Devorah Isha Neviya, Eishes Lapidos, that Devorah was a woman who was a prophetess, and she was the wife of Lapidus. Okay? So now the question is, why does the Torah mention my Eishes Lapidus? Why does it mention that she was the wife of Lapidus? So the answer is, Shehoyeso Osa Pesilos Flamiklos. She used to make wicks for the lights in the temple. I mean, in those days they didn't have a temple. What did they have? They had the sanctuary in Shiloh. So she was the one who would make wicks for it, you know, as a mark of piety. Now, of course, you'll say, how do we know that? So the answer is that it's based upon the fact that lapid in Hebrew means a torch. Means a torch. So Lapidos, therefore, means, you know, she was the wife of Lapidus. In other words, she was the woman who made the wicks for the torches in the Mishnah.
Lapidus
right.
is the Hebrew name, though. Right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, of course, a lot of Jews now have that name as a name, yeah. Lapidus, right? But this is the origin of the name, okay? Yeah. Okay.
See, that's a way, another way of saying she was the light of his life when you come right down to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, of course.
Think
okay.
about it.
Now, we're talking about Devorah, and of course we already mentioned that she was Isha Neviya. So it continues, the pasuk continues by saying, V'hi Yosheves Tachas Tomer. And she would sit underneath a Tomer. Tomer is a date pot. She would sit underneath a date pot. Lev, you remember the description that we have in the book of Judges over there, chapter 4, chapter 5, happens to be chapter 4, you know, where the description is given first of all about the Devorah itself, who she was, who we're introduced to, and it's written that he shofetet Israel, that she was a woman who judged the people of Israel, right? And, of course, you know, the people would come to her in order to settle disputes and, you know, to find guidance and leadership. Until finally what happened? When the Jews couldn't bear the oppression of the Canaanites anymore, so Barak ben Avinom, if you remember, came in order to ask Devorah to lead the people to victory. And she said, only on condition that you be the leader and I'll be, you know, like the spiritual guide, okay? Because she said it's not right that a woman should be the general in charge. I mean, it should be a man's job to do that, okay? Now, the question that the Gemara, however, wants to find out is, so why was she sitting underneath a date palm for judgment? Why couldn't she, let's say, be someplace else?
Courthouse.
Yeah, why not? So the answer is, my shnor tachas tomer. In other words, why is it so different that, you know, she's sitting underneath a date palm? So, a couple of opinions are mentioned. Omer Rab Shimon ben Avshalom. Rab Shimon, the son of Avshalom, said that it was Mishum Yichud. It was because of Yichud. Now, Yichud, for those of you who are not familiar with it, this means that a man and a woman who are not related to each other, right, should not be together in the same place because it may arouse talk and so on and so on. This is
so
Yichud, right?
The outer door is
right.
Open.
Yeah, so, Yichud, right, yeah. I'm not going to go into the various laws, but obviously if there are several people there, then the law of Yichud wouldn't apply. Yeah. It applies only in a situation where there's only a man and a woman alone, where, you know, they're not related to each other, or also a door is closed and so on, so that, you know, they don't have that they have too much privacy, okay? This is the problem. This is called Yichud. All right, so that being the case, what about the nature of the palm tree? So Rashi explains, the palm tree is different from other trees. In what way? When the palm tree grows, where do you find the branches?
Way up.
Right, way up on high. So that therefore it's a very open area, so everybody could see, and therefore there was no problem with the concept of Yichud. So this is
no, thank you.
Would it also have anything to do with being outside the gates of the city in any way?
No.
Within the city?
No. It has something to do within, without the city, or anything like that. This is a question, you know, that it shouldn't put men and women into a compromising position, okay? As I say, I mean, there are exceptions to this rule. I mean, if the wife knows that the husband is going to be in a certain place and so on, for a legitimate person, a purpose, and in that case, that's not a violation of the effect, okay? But, you know, the whole concept of yichud is in order to prevent
Marisayan,
in order to prevent, you know, any not
impropriety.
You know, any impropriety. There's one opinion, the opinion, as we said, of Rab Shimon ben Avshalom, okay? Or according to another version, it's Avishalom. All right, doesn't matter. Dover Acher, another reason why they say she was sitting underneath the palm tree, the date tree, right? Says, Matomer ze ein lo elo leiv echod, af yisur shebos ha'ador lo hoyo lehem elo leiv echod, la'vihim shebashamayim. All right, it's a very, very nice thought. The palm tree, again, is different from the others because how? I mean, we already mentioned about branches, but there's more to it than simply that. The average tree has its branches beginning and going in the north, right? The palm tree first grows, and it grows like one heart, so to speak, and then first, you know, at the top you have the branches and the fruits that grow. So that, therefore, this simile of, you know, one heart is applicable to whom? To the people of Israel. In what way? In that the people of Israel in that particular generation, now of course, which generation are we talking about? We're talking about the generation again of the Megillah, because remember, we're talking about the Megillah, right? Lo ha'yelahem elalev echad. They had only one heart, La'avihim Shabashamai, unto their Father in heaven. In other words, they all did teshuvah, because, naturally, why did they do teshuvah? Because of the decree of Haman, you know, that the Jews were to be killed on the 13th of Adar. So they did teshuvah, and it's as if they had one heart, a united heart, praying unto God. Yes?
I have a question.
Yeah.
I've thought about it every time I open the Shabbat prayer book. I come to this prayer, and it says, "Make our heart pure to serve."
Yeah, but Tahir Lebeinu, you have to hold the
image. Right.
Yeah.
Now it's heart, not hearts. The heart is singular.
Right. That's correct.
And our heart.
Yeah.
And I always thought about that in that way.
Right.
That it means, it has to mean something about, as a people, we should have one heart. It says, our heart,
to deserve this. Ayasha Kaya, Sylvia, very good.
So, seriously, am I on the right track with that?
I think that's a wonderful thought. Yeah.
It strikes me every time, because grammatically, it should say heart.
Correct. However, I have to tell you that, you know, in the idiom of the Bible, very often, a singular is used where it means that each individual has just one or something like that.
Yeah, but each individual,
right.
In this case,
right.
It seems to me that even though we're each individual, we are one.
Yeah.
So, you know, when the Bible
I like the thought. I think you expressed something very good, very good, and something that we should all ponder and think about.
Here
right.
It is in the Gemara.
Yeah. Right, the Gemara says so.
Correct,
right. Okay, to continue. So far we have mentioned... We have mentioned Sarah, we have mentioned Miriam, we have mentioned Devorah. Okay, so who was the next one who was mentioned? The answer is Chana. All right, so now what about Chana? Okay. Chana Ditziv, what do we find in the Bible written about Chana? It's written about Tispalel Chana, right? And Chana prayed, Batomer, and she said, Olatz libi b'Hashem, my heart rejoices in God, right? Romo Kani Badashem. Literally, my horn is exalted in God. So the question is, first of all, what does it mean by horn is exalted? So the answer is, it's a biblical expression that we find again and again and again, which means, you know, that we are full of gladness and salvation and so on and so forth, okay? For example, in our Shemona Esrei, every day that we pray, in the week they want to say, right? In other words, that may the Zion, in other words, the descendant of David come and may flourish, right? Bikarno toru mishuasecha, right? And may his horn flourish, right? Or literally be exalted in your salvation. I'm translating very, very literally. Very literally. I mean, of course, you know, the English is a little difficult, you know, to explain, but there's a biblical idiom, okay? So, therefore, she says, Roma Karni Bashem, okay? Now, what they say over here now is, how do we know that she was a prophetess? It's from these words, because she said, Roma Karni, right? She said, my horn is exalted, Velo Roma Paki, but she did not say, for example, my flask is exalted. She said, my horn. So, the Gemara continues and it says, David Ushlomo, David and Solomon, Shenim Shechu Bekeren, when they were anointed to be king, they were anointed with a horn full of oil. Remember, you know, that horns were also used in order to hold wine, to hold oil, and so on and so forth, okay? So, they were anointed with a horn of oil. Well, what happened? Nim Shecho Malchusan. They had a long reign, okay? On the other hand, Shaul the Yehu, Saul and Yehu, I'll explain to you in a second. Shenim Shechu Bapach, who were anointed with, instead, a flask of oil, right? Lo nimshecho malchuson. Their kingdom did not endure for long. Okay. Shaul, we know.
Yes.
I mean, because after all, he was the first king of Israel, but, you know, he went into battle against the Philistines, and he was killed in the battle of Mount Gilboa. Okay? All right. So that's Shaul. But who is Yehu? Yehu was a king of Israel a little bit later on, okay? He was the one who rebelled against the dynasty of King Omri. It was Omri, Ahav, and then Ahav had a son, and Yehu was the one who put an end to that, and he became the king of Israel at that time.
Was he before David or after David?
Oh, no, long after.
Long after.
When I say king of Israel, I mean this is the time already when the kingdom had been split into the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Yehuda, right, the Judah, okay? So, he was a king, and if you know the history of, you know, what happened, you know that every few years, one would kill off another over there, or so that none of the dynasties really lasted longer than, at most, about four generations. Whereas what happened with the case of Yehuda, the dynasty of David continued throughout the time. Always continued. So, Yehu was anointed by Elisha to be the king of Israel, in other words, the northern kingdom, but his kingdom didn't last that long. It was no great bargain, even though he put an end to a terrible tyrant, and, you know, Ahab's son, who, and Ahab himself, you know, is the one who was married to Jezebel, or Jezebel, we call them in English, and they wanted to kill the Nevi'im, the prophets of God, etc., etc., you know. The famous story of Elijah and King Ahab and Queen Jezebel, and so on. So, at any rate, his kingdom did not last very long either. Okay. So, what does it show? It shows, you know, that when she said Roma Karni Bashem, she was able to prophesy the fact that those who were anointed with the horn of oil, they were destined to have a long reign. Okay, this is what she's saying. Okay?
Yes. I don't understand, though, on the basis of just each case, like on the basis of one statement or one situation, can the title be esophagus be... you know what I'm saying? It's like...
Yeah, I understand, Sylvia, very well what your question is. Okay. Stress.
Case, that's what they've been doing.
Okay. Yeah. I remember either last week or 2 weeks ago, I quoted the fact that I had a very wise teacher many, many years ago, Rabbi Chertoff, who said that a text is a pretext. In other words, they want to bring out a certain story, they want to bring out something. So they find the pasuk and, you know, they interpret it in such a way, you see, that it is. Okay. All right, so there's nothing gefährlich about it. I mean, it's a very nice drash, and that's
pretext,
it, it's a drash.
By a pretext, you mean like a pretension. You don't mean a pretext before the text. You mean a pretext in this other kind of thing.
Yeah, a pretext in the sense, I mean, that you have a certain point that you want to bring out, and so you find the text in order to peg it onto.
Right.
Okay? Right. I mean, this is typical of all sermons, I mean, that if you quote a text, you want to develop it, you know, along lines, you know, that you have in your mind.
Yeah.
It's not simply, let's say, an exposition of text, but, you know, you want to bring out certain points and so on. So they wanted to bring out this point, you know, that she was a prophetess. How could they prove it? So this is an interpretation in order to prove the fact that she was able to foretell with the Ruach HaKodesh, with the Holy Spirit, that Roma Karni Bashem, that those who were anointed with the horn of oil, they were the ones who were destined to have a long dynasty. Okay? All right. Then, inasmuch as we already mentioned Chana, and we quoted, you know, the song of Chana that she sang in happiness at the fact that, you know, she was finally able to give birth to Shmuel. So it continues, Ein Kodosh Kashem, there is no one as holy as the Lord, huh? I'm sorry?
She gave birth to Shmuel?
Yeah, Shmuel.
Shmuel,
Samuel, right, yeah. Ein Kadosh Kadoshem, there's none as holy as God, ki ein biltecha, there is none like unto you, none beside you, okay? Now, Omar Rav Yehuda Ben Asher, Rav Yehuda Ben Asher, he gave the following drash, okay? What is the drash? He says, Al Tikre, don't read it as Biltecha alone, but get in an additional idea, namely to be able to survive you. Shelo kemidas HaKadosh Baruch Hu midas Bosu V'dam. That the Rebbeinu Shelolam's character is not exactly the same as that of a human being. Bosu V'dam, in the case of somebody who is flesh and blood, Masa Yoda Mivalinoso, he passes away, but his works can endure. Avol HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the Holy One, blessed be He, Mivala Masa Yoda. In other words, He always is there and always can fulfill His handiwork, and His handiwork endures forever. Okay? As I say, I mean, this is a drash, you know, based upon how they, you know, about Biltecha, it takes in the sense of Levalasecha. Okay. Then it says, if you remember, V'yein Tzur Keloheinu, and there is no rock as our God. Okay? So, very beautiful drash that we have over here. Ein Tzur Keloheinu, it says, Ein Tzayar Keloheinu. Tzayar is an artist. The Veda Shalalam is the supreme artist. There is no artist like the Rebbeinu Shelolam. Why? Odom tzatzur al gabei hakosel. A human being can, let's say, make a drawing on a wall, right? The yenu yochel ahatul bo ruach nishome kravayim neimei ayah. Okay? But he cannot put into this picture that he draws a soul, spirit, you know, a breath of life, a soul, the inner organs or the intestines, and in other words, the things that make up a human being, right?
Well,
God. He cannot, right. Avala Kodesh Baruch Hu, but the Holy One, blessed be He, Tzara Tzura B'Sof Tzura. He can create one form within another, right? In other words, He can make, first of all, He can make human beings who are born from human beings, right? Okay, and He can create within this, this human being that He creates, a breath of life, a soul, inner organs, intestines, and so on. In other words, you can make a living human being. This is what the Rebbeinu Shlomo can accomplish. Okay. So he is the supreme artist. He's able to do these things. Now the next one who they mention is Abigail. In English we call her Abigail. Okay? Who is she in the first place? So we read in the book of Samuel, we discover that Abigail was the wife of a man by the name of Nabal. Okay? And David was of Taurus. He needed help because he was being persecuted by Saul. He had to hide from him and everything else. So he heard, that there was this man, Nabal, who was a very rich man. He had all kinds of flocks and everything, he was a wealthy man. So he sent some of his people to ask that they should please give us some bread. Yeah. Okay? And Nabal said, "Who the heck are you? You're a nobody, David, the son of Jesse. Who will get your neck? And don't bother me anymore, okay?" He didn't give him the bread. He didn't just chased him away. So David, and particularly the young men with David, they were very angry. And what did they want to do? They actually wanted to go and to kill Nabal because of the fact, that he was such a mouse. By the way, the name Nabal itself, in Hebrew, the word Nabal is also means a person who is a no good person. A paskudyak, okay? This is Nabal.
Nevela
is a carcass, literally.
Oh, yeah.
And that's related to the same root. Right, yeah. Okay? So,
I'm thinking of my.
Treifen de Vela, okay.
Treifen de Vela,
Treifen de Vela,
curse word.
Right. Okay. So, at any rate, as we said. No, that's not Nun Beis Lamed, but Nun Vav Lamed. Yeah.
Also,
Mias and so on, the Nabal, a person who is the Mias in character and so on, right? Yeah.
Now, can I ask you to translate
Sure.
Can I ask you to translate what Sylvia just said
what
the expression was?
Oh, yeah, a Mias in the
Vela? A
rotten carcass, literally, right? Yeah. Well, we speak about something being a treif in the Vela. Right, okay? Okay. It's not kosher to eat a treifa or a nevela. Okay. It's not kosher. Okay.
It's an old time Jewish curses.
Okay. All right. So, to continue, with your permission. Okay. So, how does Abigail enter upon the scene? So, the answer is she goes secretly to David and she tells him, he's a paskunyak. Yeah, Nabal Shmo, right? Kishmo Cain, who she says, what his name implies. That's exactly what he is like. Okay, but nevertheless, right about her own husband. I guess she didn't have such a tzatzkadik of a marriage with him or something. Yeah. Okay, but this is what she says, but she begs David, not to do him any harm, and so as a matter of fact. She sent David already food and drink and everything else, and so in order to supply his necessities. Okay? So, this is the introduction to Abigail. All right? Now, how do we know that she was a prophetess? This is the question, right? So, it continues. We're on the third line from the bottom towards the end. It says, Nechsev, the pasuk is, V'hayah hi rocheves alachabor v'yoredes b'seser rahor. And behold, she was riding on the donkey and descending into literally the secret part of the mountain. In other words, you know, the bottom of the mountain where I guess probably the vegetation covered it or something. Okay. But, you know, Sesar means secret, literally. So the Gemara asks, B'Sesar Hahor? Why does it say B'Sesar Hahor? It should really say she descended what?
From
the mountain. So Amar Rabba Bar Shmuel, so Rabba Bar Shmuel said, Al Iske Dam Habo Min Hasesorim. She came in order to discuss with him blood which comes from the secret area. In other words, you know, blood that comes from the vagina. Okay? She wanted to get, you know, his ruling about it as to what? As to whether she was a Nida or she was not a Nida. You understand? So, she came to David because David already, in her opinion, was what? He was like a Rav, right? You understand? And she had a Hera Solo, and so she showed him, you know, the drop of blood that she wanted his opinion about. So, Omar Law, so he said to her, the Chimar and Dam Balayla, tell me, can we actually take a look at the blood at night? You know, we don't have the proper light in order to see what it is. So, Omar Law, so she answered him, she said, Chidon and Din Nefashis Balayla, so tell me, is it permitted to judge cases of capital punishment at night? So, Omar, you see, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that if you have a trial, if you can, for example, exonerate the person during the day, then you do so, okay? But if you feel that the person is guilty, then you have to carry it over during the night and give the judges more of an opportunity to think about it, and only on the following day can they then come to some kind of a conclusion and decide whether the person is, you know, guilty or innocent, right? So, as we see, he answers, you know, he says to her, I can't examine the blood because it's night. So she says, no, so is it permitted to judge a person and condemn him to death at night? He doesn't need the first one island, so Omar Law. So he answered her, and we already have the next page over there. You have the next page over there? Those of you who have it, it's going to say in the corner 28. It's going to say 28.
28? It
says 28.
Okay.
It says 28.
Yeah.
It says 28.
Oh, thank you.
Anybody else need these? Yeah.
The reason it says 28 is because, as I told you, since each dot has two sides to it, right? So the other one was 14 aleph, and this is 14 bays. But 14 bays, in other words, is like saying 2 times 14, so that gives you that 28 that you see on the top. This is the convention, the way it's numbered over here, okay?
Dr. Miller, I got a question about Abigail. That's used in English literature a lot,
isn't
it?
Well, no, I mean, don't forget that a lot of people like biblical names. This was particularly true.
But is it used in Hebrew? I mean, is it a Hebrew name?
Abigail?
Occasionally.
Occasionally.
Not
as common as some of the other names that, you know, David's wife, I mean, eventually she became a wife of David too, as we'll see, okay? But some of the names, you know, have become very, very popular.
Yes.
Okay?
English literature.
Right. Not just in English, but in Israel today, you know, a lot of these names have been revived again. Okay? Sometimes even the names of characters who are not so ayayay have also been named, you know, given names in Israel. As for example, I mentioned a little earlier this evening Omri. He happened to be a king of Israel. He happened to be a very successful general, and as a matter of fact, he was the one who founded the city of Shomron, the city of Samaria. Okay? Right, made it its capital. But, you know, he doesn't come across as being a very nice character. However, I noticed that Sharon called his son Omri. He's the one who's been negotiating secretly with the PLO and see if they could come to some sort of an agreement. So,
PLO.
Yeah?
PLO.
Yeah, with the PLO.
His son.
Right.
His
trying
son.
To negotiate, you know,
I guess he was thinking
Arafat and so on. You see. Right,
he was
yeah.
more thinking of the his army capabilities, maybe, in naming him. He was a general.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, whatever reason he had. Okay, so...
His general
said, right.
capabilities rather
yeah,
than his
right.
character.
On the other hand, for example, you have other names, so they become popular in Israel. They're named after months, they're named after trees, after flowers, and things like that.
And they
know.
Really just make up names, don't they?
In
that's
some cases, maybe,
about.
Right. But,
how
you
about
know.
The name John? Is there any Jewish people who have the name John?
Oh, sure.
You don't hear it too often.
Jonathan.
J-O-H-N.
No. Okay. You have to realize, the name John yeah. in English is really Yochan or Yochanan. It's really, it should be Yochanan, okay? So,
In English it's John.
In English it's John, right. So inasmuch as American Jews are looking for fancy names, so you have John and James.
And James, yeah.
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 And then there was a time when they were named after the English nobility, Seymour,
oh, yeah,
and Milton.
right.
So these became popular names among the Jews.
Well, they're changing, though. They're really much
right.
going a lot
right.
back to
right. yeah.
actual Hebrew names.
Yeah. Yes, today, of course, right. Even Reformed rabbis today like to have Hebrew names, right? Okay, so, at any rate, here we have this conversation going on between whom? Between King between David, who is not yet king, remember. Between David, although he was secretly anointed by Shmuel, okay?
He had already been
anointed by Shmuel, but still, he was not officially the king
Saul
was still alive. Okay, so... he answers her as follows, at the top of the page. He says, Mored b'malchus hu, v'lo tzarech l'midayne. Okay, which means what? Naval is a person who is rebelling against the king. And in that particular case, we have a halacha which says that if you rebel against the king, then in that particular case, you don't have to go through the ordinary forms of court procedure in order to convict a person. Okay? Reminds me, you know, this business that's going on in America today, you know.
The tribunals,
right. Against those who keep yelling, you know, you have to give them all the civil rights. Have an ACLU lawyer appointed for the Taliban and go through and so on.
You mean,
right. So,
could be you tomorrow, doctor.
Pardon me?
Could be you tomorrow.
Yeah, I guess, okay. But I'm pointing out the fact, you know, that sometimes the ordinary procedure of law is suspended, correct? Okay.
But I don't understand that, because you already said that you're not allowed to give a death sentence at night.
That's correct. That's under all normal circumstances.
Right.
That is correct.
So,
but what David is telling her is he is a rebel against the king, meaning me, of course, because he considered himself the king of Israel in that respect, right? And therefore, his sentence does not have to depend on the ordinary rules of court procedure. This is what he's telling her. So Amar lo, so what does she say to him? She said to him, Adayin shul kayom. Listen, Saul is still alive, and the time for your reputation, you know, to be king, this has not yet come to pass. So, Omar lo, so he says to her, Baruch ta'ameich uvrucha at. He says, blessed is your reasoning, right? And blessed also are you. In other words, your arguments are absolutely convincing to me, and so are you blessed to me. Because you have withheld me today, in other words, you prevented me today from
shedding blood.
From shedding blood, right. literally, coming into blood, but shedding blood. And the Gemara says, Domim Tate Mashma, which has become a very famous phrase, you know, in general. Domim, literally, blood, Tate Mashma, has two different meanings. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The word Domim, okay, has two different meanings. Normally, when we use this expression, Domim Tate Mashma, it means we're not talking necessarily about blood, but money. Money is also called domim. Okay?
Yeah, well,
money is called domim sometimes
in
Hebrew.
I'm confused about domim is like a plural word.
Correct, correct, correct.
So the
right.
Blood to me, I always thought of as dom.
Yes, okay. So
I don't understand.
All right, Rashi will explain on the top line over there. It says, why does it say bloods? Because it says dam nida, which fiches damim. In other words, you have withheld me today, you've prevented me from violating two different things. One of them being the fact, you know, that I would have had, let's say, relations with a woman who is a menstruant, you understand? That's the dam nida part. And also, you prevented me today from killing a person, that's called shvichas domit, okay?
Spilling
committing murder. Right,
spilling,
yeah, but it
yeah.
means murdering, okay? Shvichas domit, okay. So, therefore, that's the reason why he used the word domim, in other words, you stopped me from doing two things which, you know, were absolutely wrong for me, okay? Right. Ela melamed. But at the same time, it teaches us that Yirsa Ishoko, the Halach Le'er given passwords. But this conversation between David and Abigail teaches us that she revealed a little bit of her leg or her thigh, right? And as a result, he followed her radiance for. Three parsers, in other words, let's say 10 miles, in other words, he chased after her. Because what did he want? You know, he lusted after her, right? So, Omar Law, so he said to her, Hashmili, will you, literally, will you listen to me? In other words, I mean, will you, you know,
agree
to me? All right. So, Omar Law, so she said to him, let this not be a stumbling block unto you. In other words, don't do this which is wrong right now. Okay? You understand?
Yes.
Yeah, all right. She says, Zos, this. So, Niklal, so from this we can infer the Ika Achrite, that there is somebody else where David is bound to stumble with, right? Umay Nihu, right? And what are we referring to? Maase de Bathsheba, okay? In other words, business with Bathsheba, where David, of course, did stumble, he sinned, and so on, okay?
Can I ask, you said Dunim was also money.
Yes.
Blood money?
Yeah, blood money is what came to my mind. Is that
yeah, but not really. Because the Gemara, damim, is used very often simply, let's say, for commercial exchanges and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't necessarily refer to what we call in English blood money. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a different story, okay? Also, I mean, even though, you know, there may be a phraseology which one thing suggests another, but in reality, we're talking about two different things, okay? Now, Gemara says now, Maskana Hochi Havai. And what finally happened at the end? Today, when we use the word Maskana, we mean, and what is the conclusion that we come to? Okay? So, what was the conclusion that happened? She says to him, V'hoi so nefesh Adoni tzururo b'tzvah ha'chayim. May the soul of my master, you know, meaning the king, meaning David, right, be bound up in the bond of life, okay? And of course you recognize over here that, you know, on the tombstone and the Molei Rachamim and so on, that this is the phrase that we always use, okay? So this is the origin of it. She said it to David, that may you always live, right? Be bound up in the bond of life. Ki havas miftere min, eh? And then when she finally said farewell to him, Omolei, she said to him at that time, the heitiv adishem ladoni, may the Lord do good unto my master, v'zochatra es amasecha, and may you also remember your handmaid. In other words, remember me. Okay? So Omar Rav Nachman, so this is what Rav Nachman said, Hainu di Amri Inche, this is what people say. In the Gemara, whenever you find that Hainu di Amri Inche, they quote a popular proverb. And what is the popular proverb that they quoted over here? It's Itza Vahade Shusa Pilka, which means when a woman is she's doing the weaving, so she weaves yarn, but the implication is that at the same time she's also thinking of something else. Not only is her mind on the work, but she's dropping a hint or she's thinking about something else going on. Now, what is the implication over here in what she said to King David? The implication is that when God will do good unto you, namely, that, you know, when the time comes and my husband has a heart attack and passes away, which is what happened to Novel, right? So in that case, remember your maidservant. Keep me in mind, okay?
She couldn't have been very happy. The
wrong, no, she thinks ahead.
Yeah, but there was indication before she wasn't very happy.
Right, right. Ikon the Amre, there are those who say, well, we have another proverb to the same. It says, Shapil v'azil bar avzo v'neu mitifei. Okay. Which means what? The dog may keep his eyes down to the ground, but nevertheless, his eyes can see from afar. In other words, you say one thing at the time, but at the same time, you're already thinking in the future. And so this is the case of Avigai. Okay.
Setting the ground.
Right, right. Laying the groundwork for the future, exactly.
In
okay.
What position of wifehood was she with David?
She became his second wife. Who was the first wife? Let's see if we remember. Michal, very good. Michal, who was the daughter of King Saul, okay? Yeah. Michal is a very, very popular name in Israel today, incident. Right. Michal is very popular.
Was Abigail's son one of those that rose up against David?
Okay. She had children, you know, but actually it wasn't, she was not the mother of Absalom. Absalom is born to another mother. Absalom the Tzatzke, who rebelled against he wanted to kill his father and become king, right? Yeah. Okay. All right. So far we've named five of the women prophetesses, right? And now we come to number six. Chulda. Chulda nechsev vayelech Hilkiyahu kohen v'achikum mi'achbor, etc., etc. Okay. Very famous incident that occurred in the reign of King Yoshiyahu, who lived roughly maybe about 50, 60 years prior to the destruction of the base, to the first Babylonian exile. He was a king, and it's written that during his reign, Hilkiyahu, the high priest, found a copy of the Sefer Torah in the Beis HaMikdash. And so he read it, and he brought it to the king to read, and the king read it, and he realized how far the people of Israel had strayed from the commandments of Hashem. And so he called the people to tshuva, he got rid of idolatry, he celebrated Pesach for the first time with all the pomp and circumstances, which had not taken place for centuries, and things like that. He's a very good king. Unfortunately, he also decided to fight against the king of Egypt, and he died in battle, okay? But when he discovered, you know, the Sefer Torah, So he wanted to know, what is the meaning? What does it portend, and so on? So what happened? So he sent the high priest, Hilkiyahu, right? And Achikam and Achbor, who were among the royal ministers, and he sent them to whom? To Huldah, that they should, that she should interpret, you know, what's going on, and, you know, give the king direction as to what to do. So the Gemara asked the following question, says, Uvimokim the Kayumiyor Echem is Navi. Jeremiah was already the prophet at that time. So how could she even have the chutzpah to give a prophetic message as long as Yirmiyahu was there alive, right? Was there on the scene.
I wasn't allowed to have two prophets.
No, you have to understand over here. It's sometimes what happens, there was more than one prophet, matter of fact. But this is in line with another idea. The idea being that if you have a rav, and you ask somebody else, a shayla, in the presence of the rav, you understand? So that's considered being a big insult to the rav, and therefore we have a din that says that you should not be mora halacha in become harav, that you should not give a halachic opinion in the presence where the rabbi is over there. You understand? You have to have respect for the authority. So over here too, it would be a similar case. We have a preeminent prophet, and what's his name? His name is Yirmiyahu. Right? So how could she have the chutzpah that she was the one who's going to tell the meaning of, you know, what the event portended, you know, to Yoshiyahu and the people who had gone to see her? Okay? This is what they say. Okay? So they're trying to find out now, how could Shitaka have the chutzpah to do it? So explanation number one, okay, Amri B'Rav, so the school Mishmei the Rav, in the name of Rav, remember Rav was one of the great teachers of Babylonia, right? And naturally he had his Talmidim, so the Talmidim said in his name as follows, namely, Chulda Krovas Yumiyoho Yisoh, which means that Chulda was a relative of Yirmiyahu, and therefore he was not jealous, he wasn't insistent, you know, upon his dignity, because he was willing to have her do it. This is one explanation. So now they say, Yoshia Gufe, and how about Yoshia? By the way, in English, Yoshia is Josiah, okay? So how about him? How come he didn't go first to whom? To Yirmiyahu, right? And then, you know, why did he let go Yirmiyahu? In other words, he did not consult Yirmiyahu, but instead he sent his emissaries to her. So Amri Devei Rabbi Shela. So the school of Rabbi Shela said in the following way. Obviously, it means that they were giving the interpretation the way Rabbi Shela said. He said, "Bnei shad noshim rachmoni yoschein." Women are more sensitive, more generous, softer, more merciful. Right. The idea being then that if Yoshiyahu had said to Yirmiyahu, you know, Yirmiyahu has a reputation for what? That he gives prophecies warning that destruction is going to come and things like that. You know, he gives terrible news. So he doesn't want to send and get a bad prophecy back. So he figures, you know, she, being more merciful, she would have a more favorable prophecy to give unto him. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, he gave a different explanation. Why not Yirmiyahu? He says, Yirmiyahu lo hava hasam. He says, you know what? At that moment, Yirmiyahu was not there in Yerushalayim. Where was he? Sheholach lahasir asaz hashvotim. He had gone off because he wanted to bring back the 10 tribes that had been lost. He wanted to bring them back to Eretz Yisrael and make one kingdom, right? Umenalo and Adur, how do we know that he did succeed in getting them back, because it's written, "Dichsiv ki amorcher elamim kolo yoshev." He was predicting, well, this actually is a prediction that we find in Yechezkel, which says that the one who sells property will not return unto his property. In other words, when the war comes and destruction comes, then the property that you had, you won't ever be able to what? To claim it, okay? This is what Yechezkel says. But, you know, we have a law in the Torah itself. What happens if you, let's say, you sell a property, right? And then what is the rule? Well, if it happens to be like an open field or something like that, a field or a city without a wall around it, then we learned what? It reverts to the original seller in the year of Jubilee, right? The Yovel, okay? So, the question is over here, Efshe Yovel Botel, maybe it means that the Jubilee now has been declared no longer effective, right? Vinovi Misnada Yolov Shevatel. And maybe it means that the prophet Yeshezkel, whom according over here, is prophesying that the Yovel is going to be abolished. Okay? Now, why would the Yovel be abolished? Not because we're going to pass a law against it, but because of the fact that the Yovel requires that all Jews should be together in Eretz Yisrael. Then it's effective. Okay? But if part of the Jewish people are not there, then the Yovel cannot apply. Okay?
So does that mean they're going to stay in exile? They're going to remain in exile?
The Jews will remain in exile, exactly. Or they won't come back to Eretz Israel, whatever it may be, right?
We're talking about the 10 tribes now.
Yes.
The northern 10
tribes. Yeah, but, you know, in general, right. Elam Allah.